When Iris and I started having children, we took our responsibility as parents very seriously. And we tried to read as many parenting books as we could get our hands on. And even had some friends of ours share with us a newsletter that they had received when their children were just being born. This newsletter came out every few months, and it listed the things that babies would do developmentally at that particular stage of life, and what we as parents could do to help them develop in a healthy way. I remember we attended a lecture by, I think he was a counselor who was considered a parenting expert, and we were rather surprised by what he said. He said, you know, you can read all these books and listen to all these lectures from experts like me, but in the end, he said, the best thing that you can do as parents is trust yourselves. He said, nobody knows your child better than you do. Nobody loves your child more than you do. So just trust yourself. You will make mistakes, but in the end, nobody can do a better job of parenting than you can. Just trust yourself. And I would say for the most part, that was really welcomed advice that we followed. We have not been perfect, far from it, but we're still waiting to see how things turn out with our children. But we thought that was good advice. Just trust yourself. But this advice doesn't apply to every area of life. It has not served us well when it comes to gardening. I have found out from experts, I watered, but it's find out from the expert, too much water. You mean I can actually overwater a plant and kill it? Yes. Or I planted it in the sun. It's not supposed to go in the sun. It's better in partial sunlight. So when it comes to gardening, it's better not to trust yourself, especially if you're like me. You need to listen to the experts and what they tell you. Another area in which it's very dangerous to trust yourself is when it comes to your salvation. Do not trust yourself. And this morning's parable, Jesus addressed to people who were trusting in themselves for their salvation, their righteousness. And this morning we are continuing our series of looking at the parables of Jesus by looking at the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. And if you have your Bible, you can open it to Luke chapter 18, beginning with verse 9. Luke tells us that Jesus told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous, and not only that, they despised others. Trusted in themselves and looked down on other people. Jesus begins the parable by saying that two men went up into the temple to pray. Now, people think this is a parable about prayer, but it really isn't. Well, they went up to pray. But for the Jewish mind, to pray is often a way of saying they are going to worship. So when they say we're going to pray, many times what they really mean is they're going to worship. And we actually do the same thing today. I don't know, maybe about 20 years ago, I began to hear people saying, let's worship. And what they really mean is, let's sing. Somehow, singing has come to be equated with worship. And even in our bulletin, we have somebody listed as our worship leader. And what is that person doing? Leading the singing. And we used to call them choristers or song leaders, but today they're called worship leaders. So in our minds, worship equates with singing. For the Jewish people, praying was equated to worship. And there were two times a day when people could gather at the temple to worship, to pray. That would be at dawn and at about 3 in the afternoon when the priests would offer the animal sacrifices. At that time, people could gather in the courtyard of the temple. The priests would kill the animal, catch some of the blood, and the priest who had been designated to be on duty for that particular day would take the container with the blood from the animal, enter into the temple itself to sprinkle that blood before the veil and to offer incense on the altar of incense. And when that offering on the altar of incense happened, that's when the people who were gathered outside the temple itself in the courtyard, that was their cue to begin praying. If you'll keep your finger here and go back to chapter 1 of Luke, we'll see an example of this type of worship gathering. Luke chapter 1. Talking about Zechariah, starting verse 8. Luke chapter 1, verse 8. Now while he, Zechariah, was serving as priest before God when his division was on duty, according to the custom of the priesthood, it fell to him by lot to enter the temple of the Lord and burn the incense. And the whole multitude of the people were praying outside at the hour of incense. So when Zechariah went into the temple to burn the incense, that's when the people entered into prayer. And in Jesus' parable, two men go up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee, the other a tax collector. Now the Pharisees were noted for their deep, deep devotion to living in obedience to God's laws. We're told that the Pharisees equated the laws of God with a garden of flowers. And the Pharisees were very, very careful that they did not want to trample God's beautiful flowers. They did not want to violate his laws. So what they did was, in their minds, they built a fence around this garden of flowers. The fence involved their own rules and regulations that guaranteed that they would never trample God's flowers. It would be like us today saying, what's the speed limit on I-5 between here and Eugene? 65. It would be like all of us agreeing to guarantee that none of us ever breaks the speed limit, we will all not drive faster than 55. And that will guarantee that you'll never get a speeding ticket on I-5 between here and Eugene. The Pharisees came up with rules and regulations that guaranteed that they would never violate God's laws. But this Pharisee goes even farther. When he prays, and verse 11 says he prayed, in my version, thus with himself. Some versions translate that as prayed to himself. When you read what he prays, it's not really a prayer to God. What he's really doing is patting himself on the back and congratulating himself in front of God about what a good person he is, because he's not like these other people, extortioners, unjust adulterers, and so forth. The best way to translate this is to say that he prayed by himself. He actually removed himself from the other worshipers and prayed alone. And the reason why he did that was he did not want to become ceremonially unclean. The Pharisees believed that if their clothing even brushed against another person who was considered unclean, like a tax collector, that they would become ceremonially unclean, and he'd have to remove himself from the temple area and go through a ritual of cleansing. So that's why he's by himself, didn't want to take the risk of being made unclean. And he talks to God about what a good person he is. He says, I fast twice a week, I give tithes of all that I get. When the Pharisees built their fence around God's garden, when it came to fasting, in the laws of Moses, the Israelites were commanded to fast one day a year, and that was on the Day of Atonement. The Pharisees, to build their little fence around God's garden, said, we will fast 2 days before and 2 days after each of the pilgrimage feasts. There were three of these feasts that the Jews were to observe throughout the year, which meant by fasting 2 days before and 2 days after, how many days a year did the Pharisees fast? 12. Three feasts, 4 days with each feast. This Pharisee builds a fence around the fence. He fasts twice a week, which comes out to over 100 days a year. God requires one. The Pharisees do 12. This Pharisee says, I'm even better. I do over 100. He also says, I give tithes of all that I get. Now, that may sound normal to us, but in coming out with their commentaries on God's laws, the Pharisees said that there are certain exceptions to paying tithe, that when you receive certain things, you do not need to return tithe on these things. This Pharisee says, I give tithes of everything, no exceptions. That's how good I am. Now, is being obedient to God's law such a bad thing? Was what he was doing wrong? No. But we go on. There's the tax collector. Now, tax collectors were considered, well, they were hated by their fellow Jews. Number one, because these Jews were working for the Romans, who were oppressing the Jewish people. And everyone understood tax collectors cheated. They charged more taxes than they were supposed to and kept the difference. So they were not only traitors, they were also cheaters. And tax collectors were considered one of those groups of people, one of those occupations for which there was no hope of salvation. If you're a tax collector, like being a prostitute, you're automatically lost. You have absolutely no hope of being in heaven. And here's this tax collector, and when he prays, the parable says he's standing afar off and would not even lift up his eyes to heaven. The common posture when Jews prayed was to hold their hands up and to look up as they prayed. This tax collector would not even look up. There were times when people were in prayer that they would look down, but they would usually cross their arms across their chest like this. But this tax collector is not only looking down. What is he doing? He's beating his breast. This is something that normally only women did. But there were times when men would beat their chests, and it had to be something extremely tragic and traumatic. One example, keep your finger here again, and turn back to Luke's account of the crucifixion of Jesus. Chapter 23. Near the end of chapter 23, Jesus has just died. Verse 48. And all the multitudes who assembled to see the sight, when they saw what had taken place, returned home doing what? Beating their breasts, including the men. It was something this horrific, this tragic, that would cause even men to beat their breasts. And so here's this tax collector looking down, beating his chest as he's praying. This is how overwhelmed he is by what he's feeling. And what does he say? Very simple. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Now, in the Greek language, there is a word that is commonly translated as mercy. That's not the word that he uses here in his prayer. He uses another word that can be translated as mercy, but is more often translated as atonement. In reality, what this tax collector is actually saying is, God, make atonement for me, a sinner. He wants salvation. He's recognizing his need as a sinner, and he is saying, God, please save me. And how does Jesus conclude the parable? I tell you, this man, the tax collector, went down to his house justified rather than the other. And that word justified in the Greek is the same word that we usually translate as righteous. And it is also translated as saved. He went home righteous, saved. Why? Because he recognized his need. Jesus says, everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but he who humbles himself will be exalted. Now, with which of these two men do you identify? Now, without asking you to raise your hands, I would guess that everybody here identifies with the tax collector. I don't think anybody here would say, I'm the Pharisee. I think I'm better than everybody else. The reality is, there's a bit of both in each one of us. There are times when we truly recognize our need and we know we need to depend on Jesus. But there are other times when we think we're pretty good, especially when we look at some of the people around us. You know, I'm not like that person over there, that child molester, or that person who's homeless because he's all strung out on drugs and has wasted all of his money on his addiction. Certainly better than those kinds of people, right? Well, the difference between the Pharisee and the tax collector was what they compared themselves to. The Pharisee compared himself with the people around him, and he decided he was pretty good. The tax collector compared himself with God, and he realized he was woeful and hopeless, and all he could do was throw himself at God's mercy. Anytime we compare ourselves with the people around us, we run into some serious, serious danger. For thinking that we're better than we actually are, and also thinking that we're worse than we actually are. And it starts when we're young, when we're in school, when our teachers give us grades. You know, I got an A and you got a C. I guess I'm better than you are. And it gets even worse when your teacher grades on the curve. I don't remember that so much. Well, I don't remember it at all in elementary. I don't remember it in high school, but in college, I do remember taking courses where the professors graded on the curve. And I hated it, because that meant only a small group of people would get the A's, and there would be a small group of people who would get F's. And everybody else, the majority, would be in between, average. Aren't you glad God doesn't grade on the curve? Only some of you get saved. Everybody else is mediocre. We need to remember where we stand with God and avoid the temptation to look at people around us, either to make ourselves feel better or to end up feeling worse than God wants us to feel. How do we avoid that? How do we avoid swinging back and forth between the Pharisee and the tax collector? I would suggest to you that the best thing to do is to stay focused on your relationship with Jesus and make certain that that relationship is one that is growing and healthy. And that's what our Wednesday night meetings are all about, doing everything we can as human beings to grow in our relationship with Jesus. Doing things like prayer and Bible study and meditation and what we are covering on Wednesday nights. It may seem so simple and basic that every Christian knows this, but how many of us actually practice these disciplines in our day-to-day living? If we will do these things, then we will grow in our connection with Jesus, and we will grow closer to him. And there's something ironic that happens the closer we get to Jesus. In her book, Christ's Object Lessons, in which Ellen White gives her commentary on the parables of Jesus, in addressing this particular parable, she makes the observation that the closer we get to Jesus, the more clearly we will see the purity of his character. And when we see the purity of the character of Jesus, guess what? We will discern our own sinfulness. And what happens is we actually end up feeling worse about ourselves the closer we get to Jesus. So just because you feel bad about yourself is not necessarily a bad thing. It could be because you've become that much closer to Jesus, and you see the difference between his character and yours. But the blessing of that is being able to recognize that's how much you need him. And when you recognize how much you need him, then Jesus is saying, then you're righteous. Then you're saved. This morning, I hope that through our worship experience, you have been given a clearer picture of the righteousness and holiness of God, so that you recognize your need as a sinner. And when you go home today, God is able to say about you, you have gone home justified and saved.